Hey everybody, JJ Cooper, Jacob Rudner, another of the Baseball America Prospect Deep Dives. And today we are talking all about the Miami Marlins. Jacob Rudner does the Marlins for us. The Marlins top 30, which I think has become the top 35 or the 40 because the Marlins keep making trades. And so players who Jacob has written up keep sliding off of the list because we write up 30 in December. And then if moves keep happening, players get bumped off. Jacob, great to see you. This was your first time doing, you're finishing up your first year at Baseball America. This is not surprising, but your first time doing a top 30. Before we dive into the Marlins system, what was it like to do your first top 30?
It was a lot of fun. I think that it was cool to be able to have the amount of conversations that are necessary to put a list like that together. And as somebody who came from the Baseball America subscriber pool and then entered the Baseball America employee pool, it was cool to get a look behind the scenes as far as what goes into the prospect handbook process and into a top 30, because I can tell you that the amount of work and research and conversations that you all have been having for years and that I got to experience for the first time was really eye-opening. You learn a lot about baseball players in general. It's not just about the Marlins and your team. I think it actually helps to educate you as far as the industry goes and where things are trending and how people who are in charge of putting together these farm systems and major league teams are thinking about the game in real time. And that was fascinating to me.
So we're not going to waste your time, Marlins fans. We're going to dive right in. And the first question we've been asking on each and every one of these is, how difficult was decision ranked number one prospect? In this case, Thomas White. I would guess it wasn't that hard. Thomas White is one of the best pitching prospects in the game. But I also would say that this is a team that had, organization that had multiple guys who were very plausible number one prospects. You weren't lacking for candidates to be a legitimate number one prospect in organization.
No, not at all. And Thomas White, I will say, was an easy decision to rank number one, just to answer the question directly. It was pretty clear cut as the process was getting underway that was the move to make. He has the best stuff in the organization. He has the highest upside, arguably, in the organization. There were a lot of people throughout the feedback process who said that he had the potential to be an ace at the major league level. I actually don't think we're that far away from that. There is a widespread expectation that Thomas White will be a major leaguer very early, if not right away, in 2026. And that led him to the top of the rankings. Were there other people who you could make an argument for? Sure. I think Robbie Snelling's maturity and kind of the move that he made back to the expectations that he generated for himself earlier in his career were really encouraging. You could have made a case that he was the number one prospect in the organization loosely. I think Iva Arquette after the draft had a case to be the number one prospect overall in the organization. But at the end of the day, the conversations kept going back to Thomas White has multiple plus pitches. There's an argument to be made that he has some double plus pitches in his arsenal. And so it was a pretty easy decision to rank the guy who the Marlins view as a potential number one on our list.
This is one of those things where, like you said, you kind of have, if you look at our top 100, which is up at Baseball America right now, number three prospect on this list would rank number one on a whole lot of, teams rankings, because again, this is a team that has close to the majors talent in the case of White and Snelling, and in the case of Arquette, a first rounder who was a premium first rounder from last year's draft class, not a guy who was like, okay, he was a first rounder, pick 30, pick 29 or whatever, the pretty much consensus best infielder, college infielder in the 2025 draft class. That leads perfectly into the other thing I wanted to ask you, which is, compare the system to last year. How is it better or worse? Adding an Arquette really does help, but is this system better than it was at this time last year, or has there been enough moves, graduations, all that, to where maybe it's equivalent, a little bit worse?
We've written about this at Baseball America, and I would encourage you to go check that out because it gets into the depth of how it happened. But the consensus across the industry is that the Marlins system is better than it used to be. There is more depth in the organization. They are starting to do a better job of acquiring offensive talent, which you and I are going to get into here in a little bit. That has been a problem historically. Developing that offensive talent has been a problem. And you look at the top 10 right now, and you see a lot of hitters. Iva Arquette was drafted this year. Kemp Alderman took a huge step forward. this season. He looked like a really good bat and was very highly regarded. I was going to say, Joe Mack is close to the major leagues. Cam Cannarella was drafted. Brandon Compton out of Arizona State. All of those guys are top 10 prospects. Starlin Cabba showed some signs of maybe ticking up a little bit offensively in the Arizona Fall League. Fenwick Trimble is the breakout prospect in this organization. There are a lot of people who are very high on him, including scouts from outside of the organization who have had a chance to see him. That is a pretty decent amount of offensive talent. Then you go down the list, and I think what stands out is just how well they're doing in the lower minors. There are players from the DSL. There are players in low and high A who have started to look like legitimate prospects. And so then you kind of sort it through, and 10 to 30, even beyond that now after the trades that they've made, this is a system that has some legitimate potential major league options. These are not just replacement level projected prospects. They may actually make a legitimate impact in the organization. I think the other thing that was important for them is that just the cohesion across the system has been really important for the Marlins this year. I think that the Peter Bendix-led front office has made an effort to streamline the language that they're using on both sides of the ball to be able to get prospects and major league players to be hearing the same kind of instruction. It helps them to be better when they move up. There isn't as much acclimation time necessary for prospects as they advance throughout the system. Those are the positives. The negatives to me would be maybe where it's, I don't know if it's worse necessarily, but just the question mark I still have is we're talking a lot about hitters. They need to go do it, JJ. Like there's promise on the offensive side. They did a really good job in the draft on the offensive side. Some of the international additions offensively are encouraging. Have they gone and done it yet? Not quite. Like we need to see what Ivar Arquette is going to do as a pro. Is he a shortstop or a third baseman? Is Kemp Alderman going to be able to hit enough as a major league outfielder? Or is it really just a power first replacement level bat? I have the same questions about Brandon Compton. Is Cam Cannarella's power going to be enough? Or is he just a defense forward outfielder who's not going to have much of an offensive impact? Those are the questions that remain for me. Is that a bad thing? No, it's just kind of a wait and see at this point. But I think generally speaking, the net is positive.
So what's also interesting about this is when you talk about the hitters, this is a team that also pushed a lot of guys to the big leagues, a lot of rookie hitters to the big leagues last year of all different types. There was a Rule 5 pick like Liam Hicks. There was a trade acquisition who, okay, we're going to see if Augustin Ramirez can catch. Okay, maybe not. We should probably think of him more as a bat. We kind of got that a little bit more cleared up. They have, they had Roberto Hernandez, who had long time been a Rays prospect, who I don't know if he's part of the long-term plan, but at the same time, he wasn't completely lost out there. He's a useful hitter, although there are, kind of a little bit of questions. You got a Jacob Marcy. You got a lot of young hitters who are up in the big leagues at 23, 24, 25. But the other thing that stands out here is I do kind of feel like you just laid it out. This rookie class for 26 should be better than the rookie class for 25. Because while those guys were like, hey, we got a great find 2 years ago in Xavier Edwards and Otto, they basically, I would say that middle infield Xavier, X Edwards and Otto Lopez, good, solid. They've been good. Then they had the kind of that group from last year, but you just laid it out. You would expect Thomas White and Robbie Snelling and Joe Mack, and you're not even ending there, but that's at the top of their list. Those are guys. Joe Mack should, we just talked about, with Augustin Ramirez, his defensive issues at catcher. Liam Hicks being a useful catcher, but again, not incredible defense or anything like that. Joe Mack should be this team's long-term number one catcher, and that timetable probably starts this year. Thomas White, they obviously traded Cabrera away. Thomas White and Robbie Snelling are two anchors in what should be the rotation for the rest of the 2020s and beyond for this Marlins team. Those guys are all arriving now. So is from that standpoint, I feel like that if you're a Marlins fan, the 2026 season should be a little bit more foundational. Even though they won 79 games last year, this is the year where you're like, okay, you see a little bit even more of the payoff than you saw last year as far as bringing up guys from down on the farm.
Yeah, absolutely. And that doesn't even mention Owen Casey, who they just acquired, and the Edward Cabrera deal. He's going to come up and instantly seemingly make an impact, or at least that's their hope. I think that there's kind of two ways to look at 2026. From a foundational level, like you just said, yeah, you're bringing up guys who you expect to be impactful for the major league club for the rest of the 2020s, and you're hopeful that they're going to be productive. But at the same time, I think that the caliber of talent that's about to hit the major leagues is ready to contribute in a really meaningful way right now. Nearly an 80-win team in 2025, I don't expect them to take a step back because they're going to get younger. I think that this is a team that should really be able to sustain its momentum in 2026, even though you're going to be bringing up first-time major leaguers. I think Thomas White instantly jumps in as the number two or number three starter in that rotation. I think Robbie Snelling comes up as somebody who probably has top half of the rotation potential if everything clicks. We haven't talked about Carson Milbrandt, who was a top 10 prospect in our prospect handbook. He was one of the biggest risers in the organization, period, this year. Wasn't ranked in our top 30 at the start of the year, was a top 10 prospect to end it. Whether or not he's going to be a reliever or a starter kind of remains to be seen. But regardless, he has shown throughout 2025 that he is somebody ready to be productive at the major league level. There is a lot of talent really in the top 12 of this system that is close to the majors, ready to contribute in a meaningful way, and plugs in some of the holes that are existing. Joe Mack, like you said, comes up and is instantly one of the, we view him as one of the better defensive catching prospects in minor league baseball right now. That doesn't even mention the fact that he's going to go and do a pretty decent job at the plate too. He's got plus power. He's a decent enough hitter. We think that he's going to be able to contribute at a high level. I think that you can make that case for a lot of the guys that they have on their roster. Plus, they drafted a whole bunch of college talent. And if they're going to stick to this, you know, more rapid advancement system that we're seeing across baseball, I think some of the guys who they picked in 2025 are not super far away, even if it's not 2026, from making a major league impact in Miami.
So, as you just laid out, much of the top of this top five is expected to graduate this year. Not everyone, though. If you're looking a year from now, who do you think could be the number one prospect a year from now? And again, we're going to say Thomas White, we expect to graduate. Robbie Snelling, we expect to graduate. Joe Mack, we expect to graduate. So taking those out of it, and that's basically, you know, very much a lot of the top of this list. Who do you see being the number one prospect a year from now?
You know, as much as I am a huge fan of the rapid advancement of some of these college draft picks, I struggle to imagine Iva Arquette graduating in 2026. I think that he'll get to 2027 with prospect status. I do not think he'll be a major leaguer. And if that's the case, then he's the surefire number one. He's our number three prospect right now. It would take a reasonably catastrophic first full season as a professional baseball player to move him further down the list. We have a lot of confidence in him. We did in the draft. He should stick at shortstop, and if he doesn't, it's a move to third base where he has the arm to be productive as well. He's a good power hitter, but he's not going to sell out for that power. He kind of gets to it naturally. He does a good job hitting. Right now, we have him as a 60 average. That's number one overall prospect category within the organization. If I had to go deeper down the list, though, you want to talk about somebody with like a little bit more extreme risk, but we'll see what happens. I have a very hard time ignoring Kevin DeFrank. For those of our readers and Marlins fans who follow me on Twitter, you know that I love Kevin DeFrank. He is a soon-to-be 17-year-old right-hander who was in the DSL last year, showed a lot of polish for his age. He's up over 100 miles per hour already. He's got a plus slider behind it. There's a really good changeup in his arsenal as well. And he's about to make his stateside debut. He should be in the FCL to start the year. If not, it's in low A, but he will play stateside baseball in 2026 right away as a 17-year-old. He's a 6'6", 250-pound pitcher, and there is a tremendous amount of confidence within the organization that he has some special things brewing. And so if we see that materialize, I think it becomes a real conversation between him and Arquette.
That's a fascinating one. So if Arquette, you said you don't expect him to graduate this year. If we look at the 2024 college top of the draft bats, it was kind of a 50-50. Christian Moore graduated. Charlie Condon didn't. Nick Kurtz graduated. JJ Weatherholt didn't. Is that because of where, like, that Arquette has more development time ahead of him? Or is that more of kind of where the Marlins are right now, that they don't really have a reason to push him as quickly through the system?
You know, I think it's more the latter. We've seen with the Marlins historically that they aren't one of the organizations that rushes to get their college players that they draft up to the major leagues. They don't have a historically fast developmental track record, period. I think that they stick to their guns for the most part on that with Arquette. If he comes out and he's excellent in 2026, maybe he does move up quickly. And I wouldn't rule out completely him graduating in 2026. But again, I think that just given what the organization has done, the fact that they're going to want to probably start him back in A ball, see him succeed there for an extended period of time, and then maybe ride out the rest of the year in AA with a quick appearance in AAA, that to me seems much more likely than an ascent from A ball all the way to the major leagues in 2026. Again, though, I would say it's not impossible. It just feels unlikely given who he plays for and what they tend to do with their offensive players.
So looking a little bit more big picture, you just said there's been a lot of changes here. I had fun writing last year about the Marlins' emphasis in the minors on base stealing and how they steal bases, not just at a clip, but they steal bases better than anyone else in the minors. They do it more often, but they do it at a success rate that's really, they're getting real value. And again, they're not doing that just to try to win games in the minors. They're doing that with the idea that it improves base runners in the majors. I loved Rachel Balcovic's quote that she said to me. It's like how much it annoyed her anytime she saw on another team when she was coaching, and they had a player, coaching first base, because what that means is you're saying that you aren't really focusing on the details of what you could do about getting jumps, because that's what a first base coach can help with, things like that. But when you look at bigger picture on that, we don't have to go down the base running rabbit hole. What is this organization good at developing?
It's hard not to say pitchers right now. I mean, you just look at the top of their in org rankings. It's a lot of arms. Thomas White, Robbie Snelling, Kevin DeFrank, who I mentioned, is really looking promising. Carson Milbrandt, the development there has been super encouraging. And then in the mid-teens range, there are a couple of guys who I think are younger but exciting. Kiner Benitez is in that conversation. Josh White is going to be a big league reliever for them in 2026 and looks like somebody who's going to be able to be productive. They did a great job with William Kempner, who they acquired from the Giants. He's looked really good and looks like somebody who's going to be a big leaguer soon. Eliazar Dishme has made some waves within the organization. There is a lot of pitching talent. Some of it is younger. We have to wait and see how it's going to progress over time. But I do think that their strength right now is putting guys on the mound and extracting maximum value out of them. Where they're improving is the bat category. And we've already mentioned that a couple of times. I think that there is some encouraging evidence so far that they're starting to turn the corner as an organization as far as developing bats go. They've acquired a couple of bats who I think are impressive. Owen Casey comes from the Cubs. Dylan Lewis is now in the organization from the Yankees. Brendan Jones. And then Santiago Solarte, the shortstop on the international market, who's going to enter the top 15 for us when we do an update of their rankings. It's a really good group. Christian Hernandez, another guy who I think has major league potential, is entering the system. It's an impressive group. I think that they're doing a better job. I still think that it's pitching, but the well-roundedness of their development has started to come into focus for me over the last year and under this organization's leadership now.
I mean, again, this is something I would say from my end watching it, having watched the Marlins for many years now. Sad to say, I'm old enough that I covered a Marlins playoff series. There aren't many people out there who can say that nowadays. Not just a recent one, like one of the years that the Marlins won a World Series. But I would say the thing that stands out here is, and we've seen this under, I would say now, the Peter Bendix front office, is there is a pretty clear cohesive plan here. We'll see kind of the outcome of it, but this is an organization that had a lot of kind of fits and starts and, okay, we're going in this direction, we're going in this direction. Some of it successful. Obviously, I would say the Kim Ng regime, was there briefly, but the Kim Ng regime did go to the playoffs. And then not long after that, there was a disconnect of I'm leaving. And so you have kind of different paths that they've taken over the last decade. Here does seem like a reasonably cohesive one. And while I wouldn't say that this is not our number one farm system in the rankings, that it will last with the time we updated it, we'll be doing a diving in again a little bit very shortly. And when we do, we'll see kind of where they line up, because they have made further moves since the last time we kind of looked at this. But I would say it's hard to find many deeper farm systems right now. What if you're last thing from the video portion, if you're a Marlins fan and you're watching this in 26, what are something that you should pay attention to? What would be a sign to you that, like, if I'm a Marlins fan, that, okay, the plan is working?
All eyes on the lower minors. I mentioned it at the top of this video. This is an organization that has started to fill out really nicely. And when we did do the organization rankings, one thing that stuck out to me in our conversation about the Marlins and where they belonged among the 30 clubs was just how deep and young this organization is. Now, that's risky, and that's why I say you have to kind of turn your attention there. Young talent is not guaranteed talent. It's promise, but that's not the same as production. And so I do wonder right now what some of these low minors guys turn into in 2026. Luis Araña is a great example. He was in the DSL, looked like a really promising table-setting type bat. Luis Cova is somebody who we became higher on this season. He showed a much better, well-rounded skill set in his second go-around in the DSL. What does it look like when he gets to the United States? I mentioned Keiner Benitez, PJ Morlando, Noble Meyer, Leomar Martinez, Grant Shepherdson. I can keep going down the list, but like this 20 to 30, maybe even 30 plus range has a lot of guys who are in their low 20s, who are in high A and low A, who have a chance to get to double A this season. And are those guys continuing the production that we saw this year? I'll give you a benchmark player, somebody to just like lock in on, and let's see how it goes with this guy, because I think that it'll be indicative of what the organization is doing well. Leomar Martinez this year looked outstanding. He was extremely productive. He developed multiple pitches. We saw him have a lot of success in the surface level stats. Does that continue when you get to the high minors? That to me is a huge indicator. He should probably get to double A at some point in 2026. What does that double A debut look like? Noble Meyer, who is a product of a lot of change within that organization, that has not been a linear development or a smooth one in the slightest. He was a top five prospect in that organization. Now he doesn't crack the top 20 for the Marlins after the trades that they've made. So I think that you need to see them avoid some of these hiccup developments like we saw with Meyer. I think that you need to see them avoid some of the PJ Morlando type tracks with their hitters. That's not to say that those guys can't, you know, still be saved. They're both very young, but they aren't where they used to be even a year ago. So I would be looking to see how some of these younger players who have some promise, who have some tools, what does that turn into in terms of 2026 production? Where do they end their year? Are they in the mid minors? Do some of them get to AAA? Who debuts? Those are the questions that I would be asking and the things that I would be following, because like you just said, it's a lot of depth for this Marlins organization, but it's a lot of young depth, a lot of unproven depth. And now it's time to see, you know, whether that turns into things that are a little bit more tangible and concrete progress.
So for the video portion of it, we thank you for joining us now. But if you want more on the Baseball America podcast feed, and for our podcast listeners, just stick around. We'll be right back to talk a little bit more about the Marlins right after this quick break.
Every day, companies you've probably never heard of are making billions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records in the internet and then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace making money off of your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura's online security capabilities have allowed me to feel safe when it comes to my online presence. Aura fights back. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal. It is a full digital security suite that protects every part of your life online. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager to keep logins safe, and spam call protection to cut off scammers. Aura also scans the dark web for your most sensitive information, like your social security number, bank logins, and passwords, and notifies you instantly if they're exposed. Aura also removes what is already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Right now, you can try Aura free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That's enough time for Aura to start removing your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are safeguarded. That's aura.com/remove. Certain terms apply. See the site for details.
And Jacob, now that we're back, let's take a look. I want to look at a couple of different things that are kind of interesting topics here. The first one is, and I want to ask kind of two ways on this. I would describe, I think it's fair to say that over the last 3 years, the Marlins have very much been in acquisition mode. The Marlins, I would say, for most of the last 15 years, have been on prospect acquisition mode. There have been very few years where you look at the Marlins and say, they're just shipping prospects out the door to bring in big, you know, big name major league vets on big contracts. That's not their general approach. But I would say in recent years, the way I would describe it is that they went for a depth over star approach, or depth over fit approach even, where it's like, we're going to take talent. We feel like that we would rather take talent over a specific fit for us. Is that their approach still now, or is the Cabrera trade? I do feel like Owen Casey kind of maybe fits both ways. He was a little bit surplus. I would say that they've been willing to take surplus guys from other organizations where it's like, hey, we know of these guys, you might be more willing to trade this one, but it also fits for us to take that guy. Owen Casey is a little surplus to the Cubs' needs. It's not, he's a talented player, but they have a full outfield right now. So it could be that, but it also could be, I feel like Owen Casey also very much fits what the Marlins need. Is the approach changing at all to you, or is this still fit within that same approach of, hey, we would rather take the best prospect talent over the best prospect fit for exactly what we need?
I think we're seeing a little bit more of a blend between the two styles for the Marlins than maybe we've been used to over the course of the last, let's say, decade. Owen Casey, who you mentioned, is an interesting case because I think to the Cubs, like you said, he's surplus. To the Marlins, he fills a need. He also is a lot closer to the majors. And so I view that a little bit differently because that's a ready to contribute now type piece more than it is, you know, a talented prospect that another organization views as surplus that the Marlins are going to get to develop. No, he's going to go be a big leaguer right now. He should open the year on the major league roster. The expectation, like I said in the video portion of our podcast, is that he's going to contribute at a high level. We have him at mild risk in our prospect handbook for a reason. He fits that description perfectly. Dylan Lewis, on the other hand, Dylan Lewis is a little bit more interesting. That's a talented player. Maybe you can make the argument that he was a surplus type. He's a higher risk player, and he fits what the Marlins are generally looking for. He's a younger bat. There is upside there, and they're going to just bet on themselves to be able to develop him. I think that confidence comes from what we talked about a few minutes ago, which is that the Marlins are now streamlining and revamping their process when it comes to developing hitters. The language is the same from the DSL, maybe not English versus Spanish, but the language, the hitting language is the same from the DSL all the way up to the major leagues. And I think that has been fruitful for them. We're seeing guys develop, at a better, faster, more consistent rate offensively. And it allows them to do what you just asked about, which is you can go out and go get guys that have tools and are just baseline talents, even if they don't necessarily fit an organizational need. You can carve them into somebody who does that. And I also would say this, I think that defensive fit is becoming significantly less important for the Marlins, less you are outstanding. Starlin Cabba is an example of somebody who is phenomenal defensively. Where he plays matters. We can agree on that.
Because if you're just betting on the bat there, then probably not a good prospect.
Right, but you have an 80 defender at shortstop. Yeah. So that's somebody who's going to go in and create his value with the glove. Other than that, though, you're going to go bring in the best bats, and you're going to develop them to play a position, and you don't need everybody to be a premium defender. And I think that we're seeing that trend, too, within the Marlins organization right now, both in terms of who's had success within the organization and who they're acquiring as well. So, you know, to go back to your question, I really think that they're striking the right balance right now between going to get the guys that they just think are talented, but also kind of selectively plugging their needs throughout the organization. And that's all the way down to, you know, low and high A, and then these very close to the majors, AAA bats like Owen Casey.
Also, you mentioned the DSL, the same language being used, or at least in English and Spanish, and, you know, yes, being used all the way up and down, the same ideas, the same concepts being. The DSL is where we've probably had more fun with the Marlins. And okay, So I'm going to start this by just saying, like, before we go even further on it, as you've done the Marlins list, and as Josh did the DSL list for us, and Josh went down the Dominican Summer League last summer, everyone kept coming. Everyone just wants to talk about this Marlins pitching staff that was in the DSL. And I want to just lay this out, bigger picture. If you're a Marlins fan listening to this, you're wondering, okay, is this something that we talk about with every organization? No, no. The Marlins pitching in the DSL last year was worthy of comment, as in this is outlier compared to every other organization down in the DSL. You would, if you said who had the most, I don't care who had the best pitching staff in the DSL, no one's goal is to win the 55 team or whatever it is now DSL title. That's not the goal. The goal is to develop big leaguers. When it comes to the most promising pitching staff in the DSL, there was basically no debate that it was the Marlins. What, just give people a little bit of a taste about that Marlins pitching staff before we go in bigger picture about what they're doing internationally.
There has been an outrageous amount of talent that has come out of the Marlins DSL complex on the pitching side. And it is not just at the top of the board. Kevin DeFrank, who we touched on already, is like the shiny, flashy object at the top of the conversation. Kevin DeFrank is, in my opinion, an outstanding prospect. And he shined for them in the DSL this year. But some other names who we've already touched on who have come from the DSL. Leomar Martinez came from the DSL and was super successful. Eleazar Dishme came from the DSL and has been super successful. I'm going to save Keyfredy Encarnacion just for a second because I think that there's a better, bigger conversation to be had. But you go down the list and there are a number of guys who are pitching really well. Ivar Mosquera, I can go down the list. We can do this for a ton of names. Teenagers in the DSL who throw the baseball have been outrageously successful in the DSL. Josh went down and saw them this year, and he texted me, I think it was like his second day there, and he's like, I have seen more guys touch triple digits in the DSL who are wearing a Marlins cap than I have seen in years of doing this. There are guys with advanced breaking stuff. There are guys with advanced control. And it is because this organization has invested, and again, I would encourage you to go over to baseballamerica.com to read about this. They have invested a tremendous amount in getting better at DSL development, because for the Marlins, they are the most uniquely and advantageously located club as far as the DSL goes, as far as the community that surrounds their organization goes, to be successful in the DSL. The Marlins want to be an attractive organization for young Dominican, really Caribbean area prospects. They want them to be Marlins. They want them to go and live in Miami. Eventually, they want them to aspire to go be successful for the Marlins. And that has been a factor in their organizational investment in that level of baseball. And we've seen it pay dividends really quickly. I think that there's a reason that somebody like Kevin DeFrank has shot up the board for us prospect-wise. He's only 17 years old. And we were already having a conversation. He was in a story Josh just wrote about 20 prospects who are just off the top 100. That's because they've invested. He's super advanced and huge physically, which helps. But like the way that they have been able to mold him into a pitcher at a very young age is super encouraging. And I think that you can apply that concept pretty widely. That brings me to this. Keyfredy Encarnacion, a 19-year-old left-hander who was in the DSL. I would be remiss not to talk about the prospect that the entire Baseball America staff makes fun of me for loving.
We don't make fun of you for loving, because we also have some intrigue, you know, but we make fun of you for how much you talk about Keyfredy Encarnacion.
For how much I love Keyfredy Encarnacion. We're talking about a 19-year-old left-hander who's up to 101. He has shown outstanding stuff. There is not a lick of control within this profile. The stuff is all over the place. I believe he walked 19 batters in 3 innings coming off of Tommy John surgery in 2025. But the Marlins have some confidence that this is a guy who has outstanding reliever potential. Like I said, the stuff is great, and it's just about honing in the mechanics and getting him in the zone. I will say that you know, for as funny as the stat line looks from 2025, he was coming off a serious injury. He has missed a tremendous amount of time, and he barely played in live action in 2025. What does it look like in 2026 is a big question, but that's somebody who could also explode for them out of the DSL ranks. I believe he'll probably restart the year in the DSL, but a move to the complex league reasonably shortly after that, if not right away, is definitely in the cards. And again, if they can clean him up the way that we've seen with some of these other Dominican Summer League prospects, you're talking about a guy who's got primo stuff. So there's a lot of promise for this organization in that part of the world right now. And they've done, you know, a lot to make a concerted effort in investing in it.
So that is kind of one of those things. I think what you just said, if I'm a Marlins fan, I would find very interesting and very smart from a standpoint of, we've never seen the Marlins really fully take advantage of this. We know, like, either on a player or a fan perspective, you are in Miami. We've seen this with the World Baseball Classic, right? We've seen that it is possible to absolutely pack a stadium in Miami to the gills with people very excited about baseball. But the second part that you hit there is that it is also very logical that a well-run Marlins team, with putting more resources towards their big league payroll also, could 100% be a destination point for a lot of players. Because, you know, one place that a lot of players would be happy to live if they were living there with a successful big league team, Miami's going to check a lot of boxes there. Again, like you said, if you are a Dominican star, or, you know, especially, that's an easy trip. You are talking about, like, you can, you know, again, you have a very large Spanish-speaking community that, you know, there are, you are not going to have problems finding great Dominican restaurants in the area. You know, again, I don't want to say just Dominican. You could take, you know, if you are from Colombia, if you are from Venezuela, there are, but what I'm saying, Lewis, is it's 100% true that the Marlins should be one of the teams that is making the biggest push to develop Latin American players, because if they succeed, they have not just the opportunity to succeed like other teams, they have the opportunity to be a destination in a way that is going to be a little bit of an easier sell than if you're, say, let's just say the Cleveland Guardians, or, you know, the St. Louis, like an upper Midwest team, the Minnesota Twins or something, where it's like, it's going to be a little colder there. You know, like we see, you know, like there, it's Miami. It's Miami. Miami is a destination place. Do you see, I mean, are you starting to see little hints that, again, that this plan could end up coming to fruition down the road?
Yeah, absolutely. And, I would go back to this. I think that if you're a Marlins fan and you're looking for reasons to feel encouraged right now, you have a leadership group, starting with Peter Bendix and working down, that is extremely invested in repairing the image of this club from a competitive standpoint, but from a cultural standpoint as well, which encapsulates exactly what we're talking about. They want to be the destination club for Latin America, as the Dodgers are to Japanese players. The Marlins want to be for players from Caribbean island nations. They want Latin American players to look at that club and say, that's where I want to play. And I'll share something, and I hope our listeners understand, you know, out of sensitivity to the people who I'm talking to, I can't get fully into the details of this, but I can tell you that there was a major league pitcher who was traded from their roster, who is Latin American, who was sad to go away from an organization that was not trending towards being a playoff team, simply because he loved where the direction was going culturally. He loved being in Miami, where he had family, where he had, you know, cultural similarities to a massive, as you said, Spanish-speaking community. And I think that that's a really great sign for the org. Not this, to be clear, this is not to say that they shouldn't be trading away Latin American pitchers who are successful. This is to say that I think that if you're a Marlins fan, you should hear this and go, that's great that we have major league pitchers who are good, who want to be there, because that has not always been the case for Miami. That has been part of the problem, in addition to the, you know, major league spending is an issue for Miami. It always has been. And they need to rectify that in order to really get over the threshold here and be a competitive club, especially, you know, in the NL, where you are going to compete annually with the Mets and the Dodgers and some of the Brewers. But the other part of the battle here is developing a culture that players want to be a part of, that players aren't fleeing to go to more competitive markets. I think that there's something to be said for A, having the culture, but B, being able to go, you want to come live in sunny South Florida and not pay state income tax and play for a club where you're surrounded by, you know, culturally similar people. That's huge. And this organization is starting to lean into that. And so I think that there's an element of, yes, the player development in the baseball has taken a step forward, and I think we're seeing signs of that. But I would also say that we're seeing signs of an organization that has real synergy from the top down and has a clear set of goals in terms of what it wants to be and what it wants its players to think of it as. And we're seeing that pay off. And so yes, I do believe that part of the success that this team is having is that we're seeing Latin American prospects shoot up in the rankings. I mentioned Luis Cova, Starlin Caba, Luis Araña, Andrew Salas, Esmiel Valencia, who they just acquired, Keiner Benitez, Leomar Martinez, Eleazar Dishme. All of these guys are now a part of an organization that really wants them to be there and kind of be trendsetters for people who are also coming from the Dominican Republic, you know, or Venezuela or Colombia. And I think that that's going to become kind of a cornerstone aspect of what the Marlins are trying to do and how they're trying to build success.
So that is an in-depth look, a deep dive, I would say, at the Miami Marlins organization. Thank you, Jacob, for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this latest edition of the Baseball America Prospect Podcast Deep Dives. We are doing one of these for each and every organization. So if we haven't done yours, I think we're coming up on a third of the way through all 30 organizations. Our plan is to get all of these done, hopefully by the time that we are seeing Major League spring training games starting to play. So we're working on it. We're working on getting these done fast and furious. We did take a little break to get some Top 100 content to you, though, which we hope you enjoyed that as well. But we hope you enjoyed this. Please like and subscribe to the Baseball America Podcast. We appreciate it. Leave a review if you could somewhere. And also, do check out so much great content over at baseballamerica.com. For Jacob, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.